Welcome to Alex and Annie, the real women of vacation rentals. With more than 35 years combined industry experience, Alex Huesner and Annie Holcomb have teamed up to connect the dots between inspiration and opportunity, seeking to find the one story, idea, strategy, or decision that led to their guests' big aha moment. Join them as they highlight the real stories behind the people and brands that have built vacation rentals into the $100 billion industry it is today. And now, it's time to get real and have some fun with your hosts, Alex and Annie.
Welcome to Alex and Annie, the Real Women of Vacation Rentals. I'm Alex.
And I'm Annie.
And we are joined today with a repeat visitor. This is actually the fourth repeat of Pete DeMeo, CEO of Travel Boom Marketing. Pete, thank you so much for coming back to see us again.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to be back and the reigning repeat champion for now.
Yeah. I don't know. We have to find a way to like give you an award for that, like they do on Saturday Night Live, to give you those five timer jackets. So when you get to five times, we're going to give you some special prize. I don't know. Again, it might be a coffee mug. I don't know. Yeah. Big surprise. Yeah.
Well, money is always appreciated as well. So whatever you guys feel.
Yeah, well, we're not making any money at this, so I'm not sure we can do it.
We'll figure something out for you for sure. Well, and we're extra excited to have you back today, Pete, because we didn't see you at all on the show in 2023. In 2022, we had the three-peat. We had three episodes that if you haven't heard these episodes, these are ones we definitely recommend going back to. They're just absolutely jam-packed with very insightful information, especially for those of you interested in marketing. We had the top six tips to recession-proof your marketing. That was in December of 2022. And we'll link to all these in the show notes. We also had the six P's of preparing for the disaster zone, which we talked about how marketing can get ready for hurricanes and different disasters that can happen ahead of time so that you're not scrambling when you're in the danger zone. And the top five things that vacation rentals can learn from hotels. So we are super excited to have you today. And I think you've got an amazing study that Travel Boom has just implemented for the hotel sentiment study and a lot of similarities between what you see on the hotel side and vacation rentals. So we're excited to dive in.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, this is the first episode, I guess, that doesn't have like a top X number of items. So we're going to change it up a little bit. But we did do both of those studies, the 2023 leisure travel trends. And then we just came out with the hotelier sentiment study, which is kind of like the sister where we did a little he said, she said comparison between what hoteliers are thinking and then comparing that to what the guests are thinking and found some pretty cool things in there.
So you did the guest study in 2023, you said, and then this one 2024. Is this the first time you've done this study or do you do this every so often?
So we've done what we call the leisure travel trend study, which is the guest facing side for years. Every year we put that together. This is actually the first year we said, let's take those same questions and ask them to the hoteliers themselves and vacation rental managers. In many cases, the questions were verbatim taken from one to the other. In some cases, we reword them a little bit or try to get some insights of what are the stressors that are sitting on the hotelier's shoulders day in and day out.
And just before we get started, Pete, for anybody who hasn't heard your previous episodes, can you just give us a quick bio on your background so everybody knows who it is that's sharing all these insightful tips today?
I'm just a random guy off the street that that you guys found. No, so I've been with Travel Boom Marketing, which is the name of our company. I'm the COO with our team here. And we've been in the hospitality space helping hoteliers and vacation rental properties succeed online. We're a boutique digital marketing agency that really does everything under the sun from a hotelier's perspective to help independent hoteliers. You know, me personally, I'm showing my age. This is my 24th year in the travel and hospitality space. So yeah, I've been around the block. I remember doing printing with film all the way to AI generated, you know, PPC images. So I've seen it all go through. So I think I've got some good insights to share.
And you've worked with a lot of vacation rental companies too, by means of ones that are, you know, condo resorts, especially here in the Myrtle Beach area. So you're definitely familiar with our side of the pond too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're starting to see more and more of the vacation rental space and the hotelier space blend together. We were talking before we started recording about how more hoteliers are moving to vacation rental typical marketing avenues and vice versa.
Yeah. So moving back to this sentiment study that you did, just to get kind of things started, what do you think were the biggest takeaways for you from it? Like maybe some of the biggest surprises or maybe underwhelming surprises, things that you just, you know, were already staring you in the face. You just needed confirmation of them.
Yeah, I think there's a couple big ones. The first one, which I don't think we really probably need to spend a lot of time on, but staffing is still a huge problem. And I think a lot of the stuff that we'll talk about that were other key takeaways kind of go back to staffing and how to kind of help you solve some of those staffing problems with, you know, being a little bit smarter in your marketing. But yeah, I think that's one thing that we're seeing across the board is hoteliers are having a hard time finding the right people and the people who are going to stick around the longest.
Yeah. And that's definitely happening within the vacation rental space as well. And actually our sponsor of the show right now is Extend Team. So I know they'll be happy that we're talking about this topic, mm-hmm. but it's definitely still an issue. And I think, you know, for the hotels and resorts, the hospitality businesses, restaurants, they still are facing that challenge more so than vacation rentals because they have to have that staff that is actually at the property versus so much of the vacation rental side mm-hmm. can be remotely done. So definitely a challenge. And just being able to get visas and H-2B visas. I know that's been a challenge over the last few years as well, getting some of them in. But yeah, that's definitely happening on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah. And I think it kind of goes down to the economy and, you know, the inflation, I would say, is really what the cause of all that is, because mm-hmm. we see the guests, both the guests have said that in our earlier study and the hoteliers were saying it in this study, is that, you know, prices are becoming a frustration point, which results in, you know, obviously staff wants to get paid more, utilities are more expensive, hotels have to raise their rates. At the same time, guests are getting frustrated with the rates increasing. With that being said, though, we are finding that the guests are grumpy, yet accommodating. So they're not happy that they're having to pull out, you know, more money from their wallet, but I think they're seeing that it's something that is taking place beyond just the travel space. But definitely something yeah. we should be concerned about, because at a certain point, those prices are going to start becoming a bigger hurdle for, you know, people who might be a little bit tighter in the wallet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're seeing that across the all kind of spheres of travel, is that they've had to raise their prices so high. And for a while, there was no problem. It was people were going to pay whatever they were going to pay because they needed to get out. And some, you know, in some places they had that money that they were given by the government to kind of get back into the economy. So there's some of this, like, not this, I don't know, cognitive dissonance, if you will, about what pricing was. And now mm-hmm. all of a sudden it's like, it's the pricing has hit every sector of every part of your life. So it's reality. But I think the one thing that I've learned to be true is that regardless of the economy, there's two things that people are always going to do, is they're going to play and they're going to pray. So they're going to go to church. They're going to still give money to their church and they're going to play. They're going to go on their vacation. They're going to be on their sports teams. They're going to do whatever they do. And those are just the two factors that people are always going to do regardless of what the economy does. So that's good for travel and hospitality, but how do you manage it so it doesn't become a growing piece of friction?
Yeah. And I think the other thing too is when you make sure your marketing is doing everything it possibly can to be efficient. But from your perspective, have you seen length of stays get reduced, or are people opting for, you know, in the vacation space, the 3-bedroom unit versus the 4-bedroom?
I would say the length of stay has definitely gone down. The booking window has shrunk. I think there's more demand for the larger units now than there used to be. I mean, those are getting booked up well in advance, but it's tough to say, but I think people, they're not booking the same way that they used to. The typical Saturday to Saturday model in most markets has gone away, and people want to take more than one vacation a year. And if they're going to do that, they can stay for a few days, but then maybe that accommodates that they can do another trip, or dad can do a golf trip or something mm-hmm. else. But you're right, Annie. I mean, people are always going to travel. We saw that in the worst of times of 2009 and other bad times over the last 10 years or so that I've been in this business, but people will always still take a vacation. They'll cut where they can. And I think in a lot of cases that gets down to the restaurants and attractions and things like that, that they actually end up taking a big hit.
Yeah, that's where you have to pull out your wallet a lot more often on a vacation, is every time you go out to eat, every time you go to an attraction or whatever it might be. I think that's a real concern.
You mentioned marketing. And so kind of going into, like, you know, what people need to be doing for the marketing. And a lot of people got away from, in on the vacation rental side, they got away from and didn't have to use the OTAs. But now we're kind of seeing that reverse itself and go back to what it was kind of pre-pandemic, when there wasn't this overwhelming demand for all these markets. There's actually more inventory than there is demand. And so it's really about making sure that you're positioned well, you're in the right places. And people are using more OTAs than they mm-hmm. have in the last couple couple of years, but what are you seeing on the hotel side of it?
The same thing, where the OTAs are such a behemoth, and they've built an incredible mousetrap, both in terms of data collection, their loyalty programs, and the breadth of services that they can offer. I think when you look at things like One Key, which, you know, VRBO and Expedia and all of them kind of rolled out together, it makes it a really compelling story for a guest to want to book through the OTA, but it can be very expensive too. I think, you know, hoteliers have to understand that it's a major part of their marketing efforts needs to be in the OTA to have a presence there. But you also have to have a presence outside of that because, you know, while you're getting business from them, you're also competing against the OTAs on meta search, on paid search, on communication, even back to your guest history that may have originally come through an OTA. And I think, like you mentioned, there's a lot of people who do multiple vacations a year, not always to the same place. So if you're an independent property, they're booking through Expedia one time on a vacation and then booking directly with you, you've got competition to get that guest back to the property. So definitely hotels are seeing, you know, OTAs being a heavier weight on their marketing budgets. You know, one thing that we found in the study specifically is, just kind of set it up, it was about 50 responses total. So it was a relatively small study, but it was all owners of either independent properties, vacation rental companies, or principals within multi-property management companies. Mm-hmm. And what we found is, of all the properties we surveyed, the average OTA commission was 16.3%, which I think is actually a little bit down. I think we were talking about that prior, Annie.
Yeah.
It's actually a little bit lower than you expected.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely was. But it speaks to the mix. It just speaks to the mix of, and that there's more people playing in that space that are bringing it down. And again, giving these people more opportunity to be in front of more people.
Yeah. Yep. And even when you take the vacation rental OTAs that are typically less than what a hotel is paying Expedia or Booking, when you factor in if you're paying a channel commission or anything else, I mean, that's probably about right if you look at a property management business that's mm-hmm. doing Vrbo, Airbnb, yeah. Expedia, Booking, some of the other ones that are higher there. But the one thing that I've noticed over the years too, I don't feel like the vacation rental management companies are as critical of the OTAs necessarily because of the cost, the commission that they're paying. It's because of the just difficulty that they have working with them and not being able to talk directly to the guests. And, you know, those are things that hotels have had to deal with for the long haul. And, you know, I think some do a great job of being able to capture that guest information when they come stay at the property. Some kind of do a, you know, it's somewhere in the middle kind of approach or effort to get that information. But we know that's super important. I mean, if you're going to get the guest from one time from the OTA, you want them to come back to you the next time, especially if you're in a destination that people do come back year after year. But I think, you know, the way that the OTAs are taking that commission out, they're taking it out before you get paid. So it's not like you're writing a check to Vrbo and Airbnb every month. It's you're getting paid by them, quote unquote paid. Yeah. So that amount really kind of gets swept under the rug. And, you know, to see that you found that the average hotel with 166 units is spending almost $400,000 in OTA commissions. My God, I mean, to take even half of that and put that into direct booking efforts would be very impactful.
Yeah, and kind of where we came to that number was both from our own data and some good third-party data, but we figured an average of 16.3% commission from the OTAs. The average property that we surveyed had 166 rentable units.
Okay.
So kind of keep that in mind as we talk about things. The average occupancy for all hotels across the US as of 2023 was 66%. So most places have a much higher occupancy rate. And then the average ADR for a hotel room across the US in 2023 was $148. Again, from a vacation rental space, that's going to be significantly higher. But when you do the math on that, it comes up to $388,000 per year in OTA commissions alone. And Alex, to your point, that doesn't include channel connectivity or anything that goes along with getting your rate to the OTA. Wow. So, you know, the question becomes is, with that $388,000 or rounded up to $400,000, what can a vacation rental company or a hotelier do to take that and still make best use of the OTAs, but not necessarily give them the booking the second and third time? I think hoteliers and everybody really has to be really, really, really careful about how they're communicating with guests the moment they get a booking, yeah. reaching out and getting them part of that email database so that you can have that relationship with, you know, Alex's amazing vacation rental company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Versus, oh, I don't remember where I booked it from. It was on Expedia.
Yeah. Google somewhere. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say versus Annie's OTA, and then I was going to be really offended. Yeah.
That would be the best OTA.
Yeah.
Friendliest.
Everybody would want to use it. Yeah.
No, that's a good point. Are you seeing, Pete, I'm curious, for the hotels that are really making an effort to make sure that they get that guest email once they book, when they get them into their database and their email marketing platform, are they segmenting those guests out separately so that they have different communication with them post-stay that might be a little bit of a different communication method or cadence?
So some do. I don't think as many are doing that as they should be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, once someone books, that's a great time. You do have the ability to email that guest directly through, you know, OTAs. You know, so starting that communication and getting it back and forth, you don't necessarily want to take away that booking, but you do want to remind the guest post-stay, hey, did you know on your next step, your trip, book direct, and since you're a past guest, receive 16.3% off your rate, whatever you want to call it, because yeah. you had the ability where you don't take that money back from the OTA, get it back to the guest in terms of smart marketing or value add to them.
Yeah. I think there's a lot that can be done in that. I know in my experience, we had it set up as different segments. They eventually got added back into the greater pool, but just the communication that would go out a few days after they stayed of, you know, trying to educate them more about booking direct. But yeah, it's a big opportunity, I think, to really focus on that this year.
And the one thing I think, you know, on that point, when you mentioned like email communications and drip campaigns, is to me, one of the most important ones is your guests, your booking anniversary message. Mm-hmm. To have an email go out to a guest 30 days prior to the anniversary of their previous booking. Yep. So most people take a vacation in the summer. If you see you're getting summer bookings that came through an OTA, letting that person know before they typically make a booking to put yourself back in that decision set is a great opportunity for something that's going to cost pennies on the dollar compared to waiting passively for that guest to come to you via an OTA.
Yeah, exactly. And that should be automated. And I think that's one thing I've definitely seen in the last couple months of talking with managers that they're using like Constant Contact or MailChimp, and they're downloading lists from their PMS and uploading lists. And it's an extremely manual process. There are services out there within Vacation Rentals that are connected to the property management system, that those are definitely things that you want to have automated so that you never have to think about it, but it just becomes a really nice recurring revenue.
Yeah. I would say all this as the OTAs are a great partner for hoteliers and vacation rental companies. They are not the bad guy. And I think sometimes I kind of could be perceived as kind of having a bad rap against the OTAs. And I don't think that's kind of how I feel. I really feel like if you're using them smartly, you're using that to get access to a massive database or audience, you're getting new guests, but then what are you doing to get those guests to become your future repeat guest? And I think that's really where the OTA power lies.
I agree.
So I know one of the big topics that has come up, I think they did some sessions at Verma in the spring. And then I think there was some conversations at the DARM conference, maybe was about the loyalty programs within the channels and the loyalty programs. I mean, hotels have been doing it for a very long time. I mean, the most powerful one out there is like the Marriott, the Bonvoy program. I mean, they've done mm-hmm. a really great job, and they did a good job incorporating their vacation rental component into that. But how does a small property manager, you were saying that, you know, your average of this study was less than 200 units. So someone who has a hotel that's less than 200 units, how can they create a loyalty program cost effectively and feel like, you know, they're not throwing money to the wind?
I would say this is look at the things that are actually most important for a loyalty program. And when you take the word loyalty, you're thinking, oh, repeat guest.
Yeah. Because it's really just about choosing your brand over somebody else's. It doesn't necessarily mean it's always choosing that brand for every vacation. It's just when you're coming to the market, it's the brand.
Yeah. And so what we found was actually really interesting is that when people are looking to book or join a loyalty program, it is instant discount was the most important thing. You know, mm-hmm. so if I'm staying at a property one time, and if I can become a member of their loyalty program and save 10%, well, mm-hmm. I'm joining that loyalty program immediately. So from an independent property, that's great. I mean, you are able to deliver the most important thing from a loyalty program, you know, followed up by free perks and benefits. Again, it's something that is a great thing that any property, vacation rental or hotel, whomever it might be, if you're a member and someone checks into your vacation rental and there's a deluxe welcome gift waiting for them because they're a member, that alone is more than enough to get them on your loyalty program.
Yeah. I mean, think about how many websites that you go to that you're going to buy something and you get that pop-up that if you sign up for their text messages or their emails, you get an immediate discount on what you're buying. And I do that all the time, which is why my inbox is full. But in a lot of cases, I end up not actually going through with purchasing what I was going to buy. And then now I'm still on that email list, right? Yep. So it's like, it's also a great way just to get emails, whether the person ends up booking or not. But that's an area that I very rarely see vacation rental companies doing. They're promoting to either join a loyalty club or to join their newsletter list or whatever it may be. But there's no immediate discount on that. And I think you can do a promo code or something to give the guest, email them a link to go back to book. I think that's highly valuable.
Guests are clamoring for these loyalty programs because, like you said, you've been trained by your shopping habits to join these programs to get the best deal. What we found is in 2022, 45% of travelers were compelled by loyalty programs. Mm-hmm. Last year in 2023, that number was 68%. So more and more and more people are saying, hey, sign me up for the loyalty program if I get a better deal or I get more of a VIP level of service. Mm-hmm. So anybody can do that. And that's the cool thing. Yeah. But unfortunately, people aren't. Hotels, vacation rental companies, kind of doing a poor job making that happen.
I think most stay on the sidelines if they are only in one destination, thinking that that's a prerequisite to be able to have loyalty is that you've got other places to send guests. And while that works great, if you do, you can still do it without that. You can do it from a sole location, just knowing that they're not going to come back every single year. But to Annie's point, if they choose you every time they go back there, it's worked.
And the data says that people don't mind. They'll use it for a single purchase. So take advantage of that.
We'll be back in just a minute after a word from our premier brand sponsor, Extend Team.
My name is Jane Field. I work for Del Mar Vacations and manage the guest services department. And we just started using Extend Team in the first week in January of 2024. So we're a pretty small local company here on Cape Cod, and all of our staff is local. We have up to 400 houses that we manage, and we need to be available 24/7 for any guests that are in-house and any problems that they're experiencing so that they can call us. And we were having a hard time with staffing to be able to provide that coverage. You know, we have a lot of inquiries that come in, especially from like Airbnb at night. Guests are looking to book pretty instantaneously. And if we're not responding to them pretty quickly, real time, we're less likely to get them to book because I think they're just looking to book right then and there. So now we have somebody that can answer any questions or anything coming through very quickly and get bookings for us, which is good. And then, like I said, she's also helping with some administrative tasks that we in the office just don't have time to do throughout the day-to-day. Since working with Extend Team, it's helped us provide after hours coverage to in-house guests and also be able to help ensure that we can get bookings all day long and that guests aren't waiting for communication from us, you know, until the next business day, which has really helped us.
The best news is Extend Team has an exclusive offer just for listeners of Alex and Annie podcast. Receive 50% off your onboarding fee when you visit extendteam.com/Alex and Annie or mention our podcast when you contact them.
It was interesting too, in the study from the guest side, you've got the things that are most important to guests on what types of offers that they like to see. And the stay three, get one free, 70% said that would be influential in their stay or in their booking process. I thought that was really interesting. We see sales all the time and it's like 25%, 35%, 45%. At some point it's like, of what? I mean, if you're just raising the rate to be able to offer a huge amount, those offers get really stale. But just thinking, as I was reading the study, I was thinking about it from my own perspective. If I was going on a vacation, I mean, like to get an extra day somewhere. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's actually a good offer that would make me book too.
Well, it's all about A/B testing. I mean, one of the things we always say is ABT, always be testing. And I think that is one of those ones where is a 20% discount better than a book four nights, get the fifth night free? Your customer might be a little bit different. They might be like, oh, absolutely. That's fantastic. Other people who are booking a shorter length of stay might be like, I'd rather have 20%. It's the same deal, but what resonates?
Here's the question for you. I know in vacation rentals, this comes up a lot now too, of and there's different services that do this, but reaching out to the guest if you've got an additional night before or after their stay to get them to extend. Are you seeing that hotels are doing that? I don't know that I've ever had a hotel reach out to me in that capacity.
I think they should. I don't see it as often as I would like personally, particularly if you're looking at your revenue, looking at your occupancy, and you know, a little mix of we can't have a podcast without saying AI at least once. But looking at the data and saying, wait a minute, this room is available for the next day.
Yeah.
You know, reaching out to that guest, say, hey, I'll give it to you for whatever you want because it's empty. Yeah. Is it harder though on the vacation rental side where people have this, you kind of feel like you're more locked in terms of flexibility?
I think it's probably harder on the hotel side because if they're, and even the condo resorts, if they're assigning the room the day of check-in, now they've got to really quickly be able to reach out to the guests to tell them, you know, you could extend your stay for an additional part at the end of the trip. But with vacation rentals, if you know you've got several days ahead of that are going to be open, it's worth it in a lot of cases.
I've stayed with hotel and mostly on the brand, I'll say on the brand side, where I'm part of a loyalty group and they text you to like give you your key to check in, and you can check in like 2 to 3 days in advance. And if you check in, like then they'll send you a message that says like, oh, your room is available for early check-in, and but you have to pay for it. Like they're selling you extra services. So I think like vacation rentals could really take advantage of that part of it. And I do feel like vacation rentals are doing a better job at communicating with the guests with technology versus hotels. I think a lot of hotels, especially in the independent space, they're still really dependent on sending an email. And if you send an email, who's going to read it? Like there's no call to action for somebody to click on that email right away. Whereas if you're texting them or you're working through an app, which a lot of the vacation rental space works through app technology to handle like guest communication, guest check-in, guest keys, all the stuff that they're doing. So I think vacation rentals could teach. This is where vacation rentals could teach the hotel side.
Yeah. Text plays a big role in that for sure.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of what we saw in the study is, you know, people are not investing enough in emerging technologies and kind of how they can automate their way out of the staffing problems that they have. You know, can you have that automated text? Can you do it in a way where it makes your life easier so you can do more with less, which kind of solves the first problem we talked about, which was rising cost and harder to find staff.
Yeah. Another thing that I thought was interesting was about the revenue management component that I thought that all hotels had been doing AI and dynamic pricing on revenue management. But as from the looks of the study, it looks like many of them are not.
I was super surprised at this one. So when we asked them kind of what technology are they rolling out, what we found is a relatively small portion were using AI driven rate management strategies. They might have obviously rate strategies, but a lot of it was much more manual than I think we expected. Yeah. And keep in mind, we're talking to a lot of independent hoteliers in this case. So, you know, what we did find is the cohort of the study that was a multi-property group or larger properties, they were much more likely to have more advanced revenue management strategies, which you'd expect. The smaller properties have some catching up to do. But yes, I think, you know, with rate management strategies, loyalty programs, social media advocacy, there's so many things from a technology perspective that hoteliers really haven't aggressively adopted that would make a lot of sense. And I think vacation rentals have done a little bit better job of that, maybe.
And I think it was for vacation rentals, that was a necessity. Like they're just, we had to do it. Mm-hmm. And we were falling so far behind hospitality in general. We had to catch up. And I think we ran past the hotels on some levels.
I was going to talk about the thing that vacation rental really has over hotels that we found in the study as well. And that was the misalignment of some of the amenities. So to me, this was probably the craziest thing of the entire study. Like I said, this is a he said, she said study from the leisure study we did earlier. In the 2023 study we did, guests said an in-room kitchen or in-suite kitchen was one of the top three amenities that they wanted. 39, almost 40% of the guests said that they wanted that top three amenity. When we asked hoteliers, what are the top three amenities your guests want? Only 11% said that a kitchen was important at all. It's a massive miscommunication between.
Disconnect.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a hotel and you have a kitchen or you can include, you know, some type of kitchen-like amenity on remodels and stuff, you need to do that. Vacation rentals own that space right now.
They're probably thinking that way, the ones that don't have kitchens, and just being cautiously optimistic that hopefully guests don't want this because good, we don't have it right now. But yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And it totally loops back to what we talked about earlier in the episode that, I mean, if guests are having to spend more on their accommodations, they're going to have to pull back somewhere. So if you can at least cook, you know, breakfast and lunch in the room, that saves, you know, for a family. I mean, that can be a lot of money that you could put into doing other things on the trip.
Yep, exactly. And I think the other thing it does as well is the price of everything is going up. We know the price of accommodations are going up. If you can offer those guests an amenity that your competitor set does not have, that can help actually save them money. If you can say to them, yes, this room has increased 20%, but we have an in-suite kitchen where you can prepare your breakfast if you want to. Or little stuff, you know, throw some microwave popcorn in a microwave, little things that you can do to help save those costs, and you educate the guest. While your prices are going up, you're also now adding more value mm-hmm. to make you more of a trusted solution for their vacation.
Yeah, for sure.
And since you do deal on the hotel side of it, and we actually interviewed Susan Berry from Top Floor Podcast this week, and we talked to her about the creep of vacation rentals into hotel space and vice versa. And so, like, is, you know, for a while it was the hotels just acted like, oh, vacation rentals, they're not, they are not affecting me at all. And the vacation rentals were like, we're here, you know, we're, we're part of this business. We want to be part of this. And COVID just completely upended that whole system, that whole belief that they were two completely separate in the eyes of the consumer. The consumer started to see, to your point, like kitchens, oh, I can get a kitchen and I can get a separate living room and a bedroom and maybe two bathrooms. Like it, they started to see the benefit of it. And so now it's the hotels are finally realizing, oh my God, they're here. They're not going anywhere. And I don't know that it's necessarily like they're getting along, but they know they have to coexist. And there's the brands are starting to step into that space. Mm-hmm. They're wanting to be more in the vacation rental space because as we joke about all the time, it's where the cool kids are. Let's face it. Everybody's here. Everybody wants to be part of it. But from your perspective with talking with your account, your partners that you work with, what is their take on what vacation rentals mean to their business and their success in their business and potentially the threat of their business?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And I don't know if I can actually answer that directly because I think everyone's a little bit different based on their amenity set. A lot of the properties that we have that are more condominiumized properties, you know, they can lean in on that because they do have that amenity set. I mean, you look at what some of the brands are doing, like with Home2 Suites and, you know, the other more extended living-esque type properties that add, you know, a little kitchen area and things like that are really booming. So I think hotels are seeing that they need to get in that space. The other thing I would say too is, I mean, look at what New York City did recently. I think it was in December, they really put their foot down on Airbnbs, largely at the request of major hoteliers who are seeing people are saying, hey, there's another opportunity for me to stay in New York without the hotel experience. I get a little extra space. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's definitely a changing environment, I think. Hotels need to adapt.
Which to that, I saw some interesting studies that New Jersey, because of that, New Jersey has seen the highest demand increase in vacation rentals of any market in the U.S. Directly relate that to that shut off of things in New York because people still wanted to come. They still wanted to stay in that type of unit. So again, it goes back to like, there's a customer out there for both types of inventory. Yep. And, you know, does it say that maybe the hotel world has overdeveloped in some areas? I don't know. Question for their development teams, I would imagine.
Yeah. And we're working on some additional studies, kind of talking to guests about different types of accommodations that they like. That's going to be a kind of a future study for this year. But I know even just anecdotally, when we go on vacations as a family, if it's an overnight, a hotel's a great choice. If it's a couple days, we are absolutely doing a vacation rental type property because with two kids and, you know, my wife and I, it's like, we just need a little space. You know, we cannot sit in a 300 square foot hotel room.
Really?
I can't believe people have done that all these years.
I know. You're laying there listening to your dad snore and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't take it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Airbnb is definitely going hard right now on those commercials that you see them just everywhere of, you know, basically saying exactly what you just described of why would you stay in a hotel room when you can rent this larger space with all the extra amenities there. So, but I, you know, I think it comes down to your point too, that when I travel, if I'm traveling for business or if it's just my husband and I, I like a hotel. I like a hotel that has a restaurant and that I can call downstairs if I need something. I like having that service. But if it's, you know, something where we want to be able to cook and there's more of us, a vacation rental makes sense. And people just have to have those choices at the end of the day. I mean, mm-hmm. it's going to take something away from the hotels, but if it elevates the destination, if it makes people come back to that destination more eventually, I feel like it all kind of goes together and it helps everybody. So,
yeah, I kind of wrap it up with saying that if you are being a true innkeeper and you're thinking about the guest needs and trying to do everything you can to give them an amazing experience, you have to come to the realization that both vacation rentals and hotels have a very important role. And honestly, there's no reason that you can't have both in the same building like a lot of the condominiumized type properties have.
Yep, that's very true. Well, that was a super interesting study and we will link to it in the show notes. I would highly recommend everybody go over and check it out. There's a lot more information within it and great statistics. But we wanted to switch gears a little bit. And I wanted to throw a question out there for you, Pete, that I get this often. We got it through a listener of the show recently, and it actually prompted me to pitch this as a presentation for VRMA that by the time this airs, it'll already have happened, but will be in New Orleans, about what things in marketing should be done in-house versus what should be outsourced. And I've seen many different ways of looking at this scenario. And, you know, I think there's a lot of considerations that come into play based on the size of the company, the growth goals, you know, what type of staff that they currently have, what initiatives are they trying to bring on that would be outside of that skill set. But wanted to get your take on it from the hotel side of, you know, what makes sense for taking like the average property that we talked about from the revenue standpoint earlier, 166 units, what makes sense to keep in-house and what makes sense to outsource?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And I'm glad you asked me that in advance of the podcast, because I'd sit here and be like, this is a tough one. So my answer kind of came back down to what we just talked about being an innkeeper. Will whatever marketing you keep in-house prevent you from being a great innkeeper? If you spend your time saying, I'm going to become a pay-per-click campaign expert, and you're sitting in your back office doing that, what's happening to really the reason that you're in business? And do you think you can effectively do that? You know, even if you say, I'm going to hire a full-time person for PPC or this and try to do that all in-house, the question becomes is, are you hiring the best person for that job?
Right.
And they're going to be working, actually doing the best they can. I would say do kind of like a crawl, walk, run to figure out what you actually can do. You know, it might make a lot of sense to, well, first of all, I'd say your organic social, keep that in-house as long as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I remember if you ever watched Billy Madison, where he tells a kid to stay in school as long as you can. He goes, stay in school as long as you can.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's true for social media, is when you outsource your social media too quickly, you end up losing authenticity from an organic mm-hmm. perspective. Paid, yep. Absolutely. There's experts who do it every day. You're not going to be able to do as well as they do. Outsource that.
Yep. But
make sure you're staying organic and authentic with social. It is so, so, so important. And you don't want to necessarily lose the connectivity with your guest because you handed that off to somebody. Mm-hmm. Things like, you know, your SEO campaigns, your PPC campaigns. There's people who do it every day and they do it really, really well. You're having a hard time competing against them. And it might be more expensive for you to try to keep it in-house than to just pay whatever the commission rate is for somebody to do it the right way and give you a lower cost per click. But, you know, there's always the option if you're a smaller property, and we see some success with this with consultants, is have somebody come in, get your stuff set up for you, and then have a quick, you know, monthly meeting or whatever it might be. You have your small property, it's going to be hard to afford paying someone to do everything for you. But maybe you can kind of find some hybrid solution.
Yeah, that's definitely what I've seen too. And I think, you know, one of the biggest mistakes that companies make is initially they'll hire somebody that they assume is just going to be this all-in-one marketing person that can do everything. And that's not the case. I mean, marketing spans such a wide gamut of so many different disciplines that you're not going to find somebody that can do all those things, but you do need to find somebody that has a, you know, smart head on their shoulders, understands mm-hmm. the greater picture of the brand and the goals of the company, and can bring the right people to the table. And what I've seen, you know, just most recently now, the vacation rental companies that are doing the best and doing, like, you know, I would say really well, leading their market, they all have a, you know, fairly high level marketing executive within the business that is overseeing the work of some of part internal team and part mm-hmm. things that are outsourced. Mm-hmm. If I had to come up with the perfect org chart for a company, that I think is what you would aspire to have. In lieu of that, I mean, if hiring a, you know, top tier marketing executive is just not in the budget, you know, a strategist consultant, of course, that mm-hmm. makes sense to come in and figure out what things can still be done by the team that you have, and then teach the company how to really hold the vendors accountable and your internal team accountable of what are the things that they need to be doing? How are they measuring it back to you in terms of it's not just busy work, but it's actually, you know, growth and revenue generating. A lot of companies, I think marketing ends up becoming a support arm of the business and not an arm of growth and innovation. Mm-hmm. I think you've got to have the support. I mean, for us, the listing management is a big deal of descriptions for all the OTAs. Yeah. I mean, just onboarding a property is it typically falls on marketing side, and that can be a lot of work. But, you know, that eventually is going to generate revenue when they get bookings on the channels. But marketing should have some time that's allocated to looking for things that other companies in the market are not doing. You know, where are the blank spaces?
A lot of times this is when we talked about how independent properties are having a harder time adopting AI-based rate management, things like that, is because if they're doing something that works, they're not trying to find the next thing.
You know? Right.
If you're a PPC expert, you know that Google has been rolling out the ability to create AI-generated images to go along with your pay-per-click campaign. Is an independent vacation rental management company going to go down that rabbit hole and realize that it's okay sometimes, but sometimes those images are just horrific and you don't ever want to go that way?
Yeah.
So if you do things right and you do have a good agency partner, and I'm saying this as the agency partner, it should be symbiotic, right? You should have a better return on your investment using an agency than trying to do everything in-house.
Yeah.
But you also have to make sure that you have the goal setting and you have a solid analytics platform to hold them accountable, mm-hmm. because they need to be able to prove to you 24/7, hey, you may have spent 20% commission on this pay-per-click campaign, but you had a lower cost per click. Your return on ad spend was significantly higher, and all of our other metrics are in the right direction that you couldn't have done otherwise.
I think it's also just being, again, the accountability, but just really being able to have those analytics. Because you can do all the things, and sometimes people just say like, well, I didn't get the booking. So they're looking at everything with, it's the booking. I need the booking. If I don't get the booking, and that's the end of the day, that's what you want. But there's all these other factors that go into play. And when you're fighting against, you know, a market like Myrtle Beach or Panama City Beach, you've got thousands and thousands of operators in the market, that the noise to the consumer is ridiculous. So you have to make sure that you're standing out. And so if you can prove that you're getting more clicks to your page and, you know, maybe getting more calls to your reservation center, like that's what people need. And I think as an operator, sometimes they don't get the analytics back from their providers and they need to make sure that they're asking for good reporting so they know what they're getting out of what they're putting out.
Yeah. And everything has to be part of that connected strategy. So one of the slides that I have for this presentation is about that marketing flywheel. And when each different part of the flywheel operates in its own lane or silo, and I see this a lot, that companies will have different vendors performing different parts of the work, and none of it is being communicated together in that connected strategy. And it's like, okay, you're doing all those things. And yes, I mean, they might be able to report back to you that it's generating X amount of revenue, but they're very disconnected in terms of, you know, what the overall goal is. And, you know, going back to what we talked about earlier today, I mean, it's about trying to get more business to your brand. Even if you get them on the OTAs, you want to be able to get them back through you the next time. Or if they book direct through you, you want to get them to book direct through you again. So really having that connected to a strategy related to the communication and cadence with that guest is important. And so many factors. I mean, the website, your pictures, I mean, there's so many things that you could have the best marketing in the world, but if you don't have the other elements in place, a call center, great reservation agents, then none of the efforts are going to be as fruitful as they can be. So it's a lot to look at, but it's a lot of fun too.
Oh, it absolutely is. And I think what you said is probably the most important thing is you're not gonna be able to do everything in-house, but if you can have that marketing executive type role who is with you through thick and thin and can help manage all of the clowns in the circus to do the exact same thing, then I think you really do have the best of both worlds. Because some things you can do in-house. You can, you know, crank out an email if you need to in-house, whatever. Yeah. But having somebody to coordinate everything is so important. And that really should be in-house.
And I'm sure you would agree with this. I mean, agencies like to have a point of contact that is going to be active and working with them too. I mean, like that just makes it a better, in most cases, a better arrangement for both sides, because now the agency is getting more feedback. They're not having to wait a long time to get approvals on things, and, you know, campaigns can just execute a lot more effectively that way.
Yeah. And it's cheaper because you have someone to hold that agency's feet to the fire. and say, mm-hmm. wait a minute, we met last month and you guys are saying you're gonna do this, this, and this. The analytics and data suggest that you didn't. That's not necessarily a problem, but let's understand why. Let's make sure that they're moving in the same direction that you need them to.
Absolutely. Well, we could probably dedicate a whole episode to that. It's a deep process, but certainly recommend Travel Boom for anything related to the SEO, PPC, digital marketing space. You guys do a phenomenal job. So we'll make sure to connect everybody after. And if anybody wants to reach out to you directly, though, Pete, what's a great way for them to reach you?
Probably the best way is definitely on LinkedIn. I'm at Pete DeMayo there. But you can find us at travelboommarketing.com is where you can find everything you need to know about Travel Boom, as well as how to contact us and whatnot. And then also, if you go to travelboommarketing.com/hotelier, you can download that study that we've talked about today. And it's free.
And you have an amazing podcast that's on that website that people can access as well.
We do. We have the Hotel Marketing Podcast, which is going into its, I think, depending on when this episode is releasing, we'll have the 258th episode out in not too long. So
we're nipping on your heels, Pete. We're nipping on your heels.
You guys back on our podcast. And Alex, I know you've been on ours once or twice, but
and we'd love to come back. We'd love to come back.
It's fun. It helps me become a better marketer, I think. And you guys probably say the same thing, as if you're talking about this stuff, you really have to know it and be able to convey it to your clients and everybody else.
Yeah.
I just get to ask lots of questions. So I my curiosity is always piqued by stuff. So I love this.
Awesome. Well, if anybody wants to get in touch with Annie and I, you can go to alexandanniepodcast.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody.